prescribed duty, at the same time chant Hare Krishna. And that way you'll remain in contact with Krishna through the process of chanting. And what are other ways to remember Krishna while you're doing your work? You have to work, right, to live? So what's another way that you can remember Krishna while you're working?
Give the fruits of the work to Krishna. So that is indirectly remembering. I mean, it's not direct, but at least indirectly, the work is going for Krishna.
Okay. Have you experienced that? When you give up the fruit of your work, does it make you think of Krishna?
Yes, it helps, because at least to the extent we give, to the extent, let's say someone gives 100% of his earned money to Krishna, then his whole work becomes a devotional service. On the other hand, if one is giving only 1% to Krishna, then to the extent he gives, to that extent he becomes Krishna conscious.
But I'm asking about you. When you give the fruit of your work, what's the effect it has on you? Does it make you think of Krishna when you give the fruit of your work?
Yes. But not, I would say, but not while working itself, but at other times.
I see. Other times you remember that you gave the fruit of your work, and then you think, what?
It helps in a positive way, because if like when I gave the results to Krishna, then other times, except during the part of the work, other times I think about Krishna, and that has got a very positive effect, because just one thing adds to the another, and eventually we try to mold our life in such a way that we can think about Krishna more and more. That means we adjust our lifestyle. For example, in my case, I got this opportunity to work from home. And I don't think I got this just like that, because of the way, because I'm trying to engage in Krishna's service, he gave me that opportunity.
I see.
So the opportunities come.
Nice. Very nice explanation. We're talking about gradual advancement, and that one has to perform some work to maintain oneself to one degree or another, whether you're a householder, even sannyasi has to maintain himself some way. But Ramanand Sakaprabhu is saying that if you give the fruit of your work while you're working, then there are intangible ways that Krishna may help, may get more opportunities to think of him. And he mentioned he gets to work at home, and that helps you to remember Krishna when you're at home rather than being in the office.
Yes, because then we can actually remember Krishna more and do less of that actual work.
We won't mention your secular name on TV here. Okay, so nice. That's a very practical thing. We're hearing this verse. Krishna is saying in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Karma Yoga, that you should you can't give up your work, because you have to maintain yourself. But at the same time, you should remember him. So working and remembering Krishna, in one purport we heard, Srila Prabhupada said, you should take up the process of chanting Hare Krishna. That means especially if you chant in a regulated way every day, because there's a way in which through this practice every day of chanting, you become accustomed to thinking of Krishna and remembering Krishna, and you get a taste for this. Rupa Goswami says it's like medicine. In the beginning, Syat Krishna nama charitari sitapta vidya pitopatapta rasanasena rochikanu kintvavarad anudilam kalusaiva justa svadvikramad bhavati tadgaramulahantri. The disease that I have that keeps me bound in the material world and working very hard is called, what is the disease? Cholera? What's the worst disease of all? Worse than cholera, huh? It's mentioned in this verse. He says, Syat Krishna Nama Charitari Sitap Avidya. Avidya means?
Ignorance.
Ignorance means ignorance. I'm ignoring Krishna. So this ignorance is a disease. We say, Om Ajnanati Marandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya, that I'm born into this darkness of ignorance. And so that's the disease, avidya. I'm afflicted by avidya, ignorance. And you can overcome that disease of ignorance by taking the medicine. Just like when you have jaundice, Rupa Goswami says, and you take sugar cane juice. The sugar cane juice gradually helps to cure your liver, which becomes overactive in producing bile and makes everything taste bitter, even sugar cane juice. So in the beginning, even the chanting, which is a curative for the avidya, tastes bitter also. But as you continue taking the medicine, gradually you can taste the sweetness. In the same way, Rupa Goswami says, if you take this process of regularly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, gradually you'll also taste the sweetness of the mantra. So taking a vow to chant the Hare Krishna mantra every day, gradually our remembrance of Krishna will become more pronounced as we taste the sweetness of Krishna's name. And then the other suggestion was that we renounce the fruits of our work and give them to Krishna. And Ramananda Sakaprabhu said that when we do that, Krishna will notice and give us other kinds of opportunities that we didn't even expect to remember him. And there is a way, a direct correlation, that you know, when we give up the fruit of our work, that our mind follows the fruit. For instance, the money, mind follows the money. Because why am I working? Because I need money. And if I give that up and I give it to Krishna, then my mind will follow the money and it will follow right to where the money is, and that's at Krishna's lotus feet. So if you put your money into building a temple, for instance, you'll always be thinking, there's where my money is, and then you'll be thinking of the temple. So these are practical ways that one can do one's work in this world and at the same time remember Krishna. Because you can't stop working, right? Can try. So we're continuing with reading the translations in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we're on text number 9. This is on page 154. How is everybody today? Good? Good, very good? Completely happy, satisfied? No problem? Any questions so far? Okay, I'm going to read a few more verses. These are really pertinent to our daily life. Here's the next one, number 9. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. And in that way, you will always remain free from bondage. Text number 10. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." 11. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. And thus, by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. Text 12. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. But he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. 13. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. 14. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. 15. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Would you like to hear the purport to this verse? I'm not convinced.
Yes?
Okay. Jagnartha karma, or the necessity of work for the satisfaction of Krishna only, is more expressly stated in this verse. If we have to work for the satisfaction of the Yajna Purusha, Vishnu, then we must find out the direction of work in Brahman or the transcendental Vedas. The Vedas are therefore codes of working directions. Anything performed without the direction of the Vedas is called vikarma, or unauthorized or sinful work. Therefore, one should always take direction from the Vedas to be saved from the reaction of work. As one has to work in ordinary life by the direction of the state, one similarly has to work under direction of the supreme state of the Lord. Such directions in the Vedas are directly manifested from the breathing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said, Asya mahato bhutasya nishvasitam etad yad rigvedo yajurveda samavedo tatarvang girasaha. The four Vedas, namely the Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, and Atharvaveda, are all emanations from the breathing of the Great Personality of Godhead. From the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.5.11. The Lord, being omnipotent, can speak by breathing air, for as it is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord has the omnipotence to perform through each of his senses the actions of all other senses. In other words, the Lord can speak through his breathing and he can impregnate through his eyes. In fact, it is said that he glanced over material nature and thus fathered all living entities. After creating or impregnating the conditioned souls into the womb of material nature, he gave his directions in the Vedic wisdom as to how such conditioned souls can return home back to Godhead. We should always remember that the conditioned souls in material nature are all eager for material enjoyment. But the Vedic directions are so made that one can satisfy one's perverted desires, then return to Godhead having finished his so-called enjoyment. It is a chance for the conditioned souls to attain liberation. Therefore, the conditioned souls must try to follow the process of yajna by becoming Krishna conscious. Even those who have not followed the Vedic injunctions may adopt the principles of Krishna consciousness, and that will take the place of the performance of Vedic yajnas or karmas. Any question? Did that verse give you any ideas about how you want to change your life? Yes, question.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
It's mentioned here that the Lord can speak by, like, speak of breathing air.
Yeah.
So his senses are like working extraordinarily, other than like from human beings.
Right.
So I just wanted to understand this. How is this? If you can emphasize on that a little bit.
Yes. Krishna is described in the Shastra, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sakchit Ananda Vigraha Anadi Radir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. This is Lord Brahma speaking, the first being in the universe who was empowered by the Lord from within the heart and who saw Krishna. And then he spoke these verses about him. He has, Brahma says, Krishna has, a body which is made not of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind. This, our body is made of material elements. It's very easy to discern that, especially if you've ever seen someone die and then they go to the crematorium, it becomes very obvious. You come back with a quantity of ashes, you know, just it's like dirt. And that's what our body's made of, about 99 cents worth of chemicals. You take away the water, that's what's left, basically. Krishna's body is not made of material elements, but it's Sat Chit Ananda, Vigraha. He has form. So Brahma goes on to describe, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pashanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti Ananda chinmaya sadujvala vigrahasya govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. He's describing what the body of Krishna is like and how he can eat with his ears. That means that he's all-powerful. He's omnipotent and omniscient. He's all-present. This is the inconceivable nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's all-pervading, and at the same time, he has personal form. He's capable of reaching all the way from Goloka Vrindavan, the highest planet in the spiritual world, and receiving an offering of a flower that you offer him. And just by his senses are all perfect. My senses can only go so far. They're imperfect. I can't hear what's going on in Chicago right now. I can't see what's going on in the kitchen, although I hope somebody's cooking. But Krishna can, he can see everywhere. He can hear everything at the same time. And therefore, this is one of the qualifications of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that his senses are interchangeable and they're all perfect. So that's the nature of Krishna's body and his form. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
It is said that in the spiritual world, even the others, the other souls, they also have similar body, in the sense their senses also can do everything that, each of their senses can also do things done by the other senses. Is that also true?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We also have a spiritual form, but it's not unlimited like Krishna's, although it has the same characteristics as Krishna's form.
Gee, I was going to say, a little bit of that is there in the material world also. For example, sometimes we can see with our hands, like close your eyes and touch something and you figure out the shape of that. So a little bit of that is here also. Or you look at a color and you say, it's burning me. So from the eyes we are sensing also. So a little bit of that.
We have senses. We're sentient beings. But our senses are now covered over. Actually, the senses we have, like our eyes, ears, nose, these are conduits, and they're actually coverings to our real senses. That means sentient beings means, we're fully able, we have eternal senses. But in the material world, I become covered over by matter so that I can experience a grosser type of pleasure. And therefore, I'm experiencing through the senses. Srila Prabhupada once explained like this. He said, if you wrap your tongue with gauze and then you eat a rasgulla, and then what is the kind of enjoyment you'll get? So our senses become covered over, and we're only experiencing some tiny little fraction of, the sensual experience that we can know, which is actually in relationship to our service with Krishna. You'll find in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that description by Narada Muni that he had each one of his senses had become independently enlivened to serve Krishna. Each one of the senses has its own service to Krishna and becomes completely satisfied and enlivened in that service. But in the material world, those senses become covered over with matter due to our propensity to enjoy sense gratification. Yes?
I was looking this sloga, and it saying that it is all Brahma, Brahmolbho, because everything is Brahmolbho. Therefore, even the sun coming and raising the sun, the day and the night, and even the flowers, the plants growing and flowers coming in there and the seeds coming, these are all part of the yajna too. Every living being is in that part of the yajna is happening. And it is all benefiting to that Supreme God. It is all, benefiting, is to say, to the Supreme God, Krishna.
I didn't quite understand your statement. How is it that all living beings are benefiting?
I was saying everything in the universe.
Yes.
Is what are the processes happening? These are all part of the yajna. The living being coming and going, and the plants, they are growing and giving the flower or the fruits or what in their production. These are all, the whole thing is happening as yajna. Am I right?
It's yajna actually is a sacrifice done for Vishnu. That's why Krishna differentiates in the previous verses. He says that work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. Jagnartat karmano nyatra loko yam karma bandana. So there's a distinction. There's work that you can do for Vishnu, and there's work that you can do outside the purview of yajna. That's why some work binds and other work liberates you. So, yes, there's production going on in this world, but it depends on the consciousness behind it. And this is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the difference between love and lust, Atmendriya Priti Vansha. If you have the desire for Atmendriya Priti, you have affection for your own senses, like you're doing it for yourself. Atmendriya Priti Vansha, Tari Bhali Kam. Kam means lust. It's selfish desire. As opposed to Krishnendriya Priti Icha, Dari Premnam. That if you're doing it to please Krishna's senses, that's called Prem. That's love. So sacrifice means you're doing it for Krishna's senses, not for your own. So, yes, everything's being produced, everything, food, flowers, everything's coming, but how we utilize it determines whether it's yajna or not yajna. So yajna is prescribed in the Vedas. That's what's being said here. There are Vedic codes which tell us how to perform yajna. We practically follow the Pancharatrik process, which is really an abbreviation of the Vedic codes. The Vedic process requires being born in a very pure situation and growing up being taught exactly how to live a life in the mode of goodness. In Vedic culture, only certain people are qualified to hear the Vedas even. That's the kind of restraint there are. And there are many, many types of rules and regulations to be able to form Vedic yajnas. In the Pancharatrik system, anyone who becomes properly aligned under the care of a pure devotee who follows the system of the Pancharatra can also perform sacrifice, which is accepted as direct service to Krishna. So we follow this Pancharatrik system for performing sacrifice. And also, as Prabhupada mentions in this purport, the direct process of Krishna consciousness, is all, which means hearing and chanting. This is also a yajna. The main important feature of this verse is that that's where Krishna is situated. If you want to meet Krishna and be in contact with Krishna, you should perform yajna. So you have to find out what yajna is, what proper yajna is, and perform yajna, and then you'll be constantly in contact with Krishna, because that's what this verse says, that's where he lives. He's permanently situated in acts of sacrifice. That's the key to success in life, is performing sacrifice for Krishna. So it's not necessarily that, you know, just because things are going on that they're being done for Krishna. If I'm in it for myself, it's not yajna. There are different kinds of work, and if I'm performing work outside the directions of the Vedas, it's called vikarma, and it actually degrades me. It's like I'm not taking any direction from the Shastra. And what does Krishna say? Na Shastra vidamutsrida vartate kamakarata. Na sasidim avapnoti na sukham na paramgatim. If you don't follow Shastra, then you don't get happiness, you don't get perfection, and you don't attain the supreme goal of going back to Godhead. So one should learn what yajna is, It's the life of a devotee, of devotional service, learning what the essence of all yajna is by performing devotional practices. We follow two tracks. One is the Pancharatrik Vidhi, these rules and regulation of Pancharatra of worshipping the deity. This is the phase of Diksha, initiation, how to regulate the senses and live in the mode of goodness, you know, performing mantra, chanting. And the other is the Bhagavat Marg, which means discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, which means teaching Srimad Bhagavatam to others, which means chanting Hare Krishna. And these two things go on two tracks, just like a train runs on a track. It runs smoothly on these two tracks. So especially in the Kali Yuga, our acharyas, including Jiva Goswami and others, have recommended that we follow the Pancharatrik Vidhi and the Bhagavat Marg simultaneously. Because in Kali Yuga, there's so many disturbances from the mind, the senses, and from everybody else we come in contact with, that it's very difficult to concentrate and perform the Bhagavat Marg. You'll be disturbed at every minute, isn't it? Or is it just me? The phone rings every 5 minutes? These are going on. So if you have some regulation in the Pancharatrik Vidhi, these are all yajna. So live a life of yajna. And if you do that, then you'll be in contact with Krishna and you'll be successful and happy. Otherwise, any old thing won't do. Yes.
Also, the when you say Bhagavat Marg, are you referring to the 9 processes of devotional service mentioned in Bhagavatam?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So in that, one of the processes is serving the Lord, and deity service mostly involves serving the Lord. And it involves other things also, like offering prayers and those things. So, in one sense, can deity worship can also be considered as one of the main processes as a Bhagavat Marg, because it essentially it includes all those things mentioned in the Bhagavat Marg.
Yes, it can. But the way in which we worship the deity becomes very specific in the Pancharatrik Vidhi. There are certain processes and mantras which we receive, which are deities themselves, the mantras that help us to actually develop a personal relationship with Krishna. The vidhis. There are many vidhis. There are many rules and regulations. Anyone from India knows that there are people who follow many, many rules and regulations. And of course, to be very clear, which we're trying to do, because we don't have much time in Kali Yuga to be complicated or obscure things, the Shastra says that smartavya satatam vishnur vismartavya na jatuchit sarvavidhi nashedha sur etiror eva kinkara, that all of these rules and regulations are servants to two rules and regulations, which are that you should always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna under any circumstances. And everything you do leads to that process. But we've been given very good direction from the acharyas and from the shastra exactly how to do that in a regulated way by performing Vaidhi Bhakti. This preliminary stage of devotional service begins with rules and regulations, that we regulate the senses. And Krishna recommends that at the end of this chapter, because he said, lust is our eternal enemy. It reposes in the mind and the intelligence and within the senses. And Arjuna wants to know how to overcome that. And Krishna says, by regulating the senses. So in the beginning, we must regulate the senses through the process of Vidhi Bhakti, the rules and regulations given to us by the acharyas, avoiding certain things and accepting other things. And Krishna says in the Gita, it's a joyous process. Raja Vidya Raja Kuyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartumavyayam. He describes this direct process of devotional service to be susukam, that it's joyfully performed, susukam kartam avyayam, and it's imperishable. It continues in its joyous nature, and it keeps expanding, the anandam buddhivardhanam. So regulation. I'll talk a little bit now about something very practical that we can all use in our life, and that is setting goals. Because without a goal, the mind becomes morose. It simply wanders and gets... usurped by all kinds of desires that pull it in different directions. So if we have a clear goal, we know where we're going on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, on a yearly basis, and especially if our goal is to advance in Krishna consciousness, then we'll always feel satisfied in one aspect of our life that we're progressing towards a worthy goal. Because if you don't have a worthy goal, then you won't know whether you're progressing toward it or not, right? If you don't have a goal in the first place, someone asks you, how did you do? You have no idea because you didn't know what you were shooting for, right? So we can have goals in Krishna consciousness in order to regulate our life and to be excited, enthusiastic about making advancement. So shall we talk about that for a few minutes? Do some of you already set goals for your devotional life? What kind of goals do you set? Let's hear a little bit about it. What do you do? Do you want anybody want to divulge what kind of goals you have?
For example, I have the goal to chant at least 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra each day. And I have other goals as well, like reading one chapter of Bhagavad Gita and offering everything that we eat to Krishna. And you know, this is just an example. There are many other things as well.
Those are really powerful goals. I like them very much. And how does it make you feel having these goals every day as part of your life?
It feels good because we just talked that work done as sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes the bondage in the life. So, if we have these goals and we are doing the our mentality is such that we are doing everything for Krishna, then our whole life becomes the sacrifice for Vishnu, and that's how I feel.
Nice. So you feel like your whole life is a sacrifice for Vishnu. Good. Sri Govindadatta, thank you for sharing that. It was very important. Go right ahead.
I'd like to have the some constant goals about improving chanting in the morning, especially like if the goals are there, then I can check my sadhana with respect to those goals, and there's a feedback that comes with that checking.
So if I understand you correctly, you have goals that you set every day for improving your chanting. Could you share a weekly goal? Is there anything that you could share with us? Is it a numerical goal or is it a quality goal?
And if so, more qualitative. Because
how do you measure that? Like what kind of things could we shoot for as far as quality goes?
So we feel something after chanting. If the chanting is good, then we feel like chanting more rounds. And we feel satisfied. We feel like Krishna is there in His holy names, like that. But if the chanting is not good, and mind is wandering while chanting, then we feel guilty. We feel not very inspired and confused. So it's like one of the 10 offenses, like the mother of all offenses, inattention to chanting the holy names. So when we do this analysis next day morning, I can see like the mind remains focused on the sound of the holy names, and the feeling after chanting is very nice. Like we feel like we are being protected by Krishna through His holy names.
So, what's an example of a goal that you'd make?
Basically,
I, Sri Govindadatta, dot dot dot.
Want to sleep by 9:30 or 10 p.m. and wake up by 4:30.
Oh, interesting. I see. So your chanting is based on, you know, how soon you wake up in the morning. So you make a goal to be in bed by a certain time and up by a certain time.
And prepare consciousness before the night before.
So how do you prepare your consciousness?
By reading about chanting of the holy names.
And where do you read from?
there are a lot of sections from Srimad Bhagavatam glorifying the glories of the holy names, like Ajamala.
Could you share one with us?
Ajamalai story is there, how we're chanting the Narayana that at the time of death, he was saved from the most dangerous fear of the Yamdudas product him.
Like this is very helpful. So Sri Govindadatta has a goal to improve the quality of his chanting, so he prepares the night before by reading something about chanting, then he goes to bed at a set time, and he wakes up at a set time, and then you do your chanting with that intention of doing good chanting so you can get a taste, something like that, right? Okay, thank you very much. Any other? Yes?
I also like to set some goals about like preaching and reaching out, because like one of the major services we have here is like the preaching to the students and preaching to the youth, actually. So I try to analyze like what all in the people who are actually coming and trying to learn from us. People are receptive, definitely. So then our duty is to communicate to them the way they can appreciate, understand, assimilate it, and actually apply it also in their lives. So I try to analyze like where we are going and what all we can do better to improve our services. And the conclusion comes that I need to work on myself more than trying to give.
Okay, so an important lesson I think I'm hearing is that when you set goals and you look at how you're doing, then you find out places where you can make improvements, right? We talked the other day about unconscious incompetence. We move from unconscious incompetence to conscious incompetence. Then we become consciously competent. Then we become unconsciously competent. And it's a good idea to at least be conscious that I'm unconsciously incompetent. I'm going to give a few practical tips about setting goals that are tried and true. My number one top tip for setting goals is a mantra that I learned many years ago. And I would like to teach it to you now. And it will give you, if you don't learn anything else about setting goals, and you just keep this one mantra and you apply it, then you'll have good success in setting goals. Shall I tell you the mantra?
Yes.
I'm not convinced.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I'll say, and then you please repeat. Are you ready?
Yes.
Decide what you want.
Decide what you want.
And write it down.
Decide what you want
and write it down. Decide what you want
and write it down.
Now you say it and I'll repeat.
Decide what you want
and write it down.
Decide what you want
and write it down. Decide what you want and write it down. Okay, so if you walk out of here tonight and someone comes and says, what was the class about tonight? You'll say to them?
Decide what you want.
Yeah, if you remember that one thing, then you'll be very successful. Do you have something to write with? Anybody have anything to write with? Raise your hand if you have a pen that you carry with you wherever you go. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's another suggestion, just about success in life in general. Always have a pen. Many things happen during the day that are worth writing down. You have to capture them. There's just some vital ideas and thoughts and numbers and all these things. And if you haven't, and who has, whoa, that was quick. Who also has something to write on? If you have a pen, do you also carry something with you that you can write on? Raise your hand if you have both. That combination, a pen and something to write on. Get your hand up? Yeah, okay. So let's say you can get these little notebooks anywhere, like this one. Someone just gave me this today. It's a beautiful little notebook, and it fits in the pocket, and it'll last for years to come. Well, probably the way I'm writing in it these days, it'll probably last a couple weeks or maybe a week. But I take notes all the time, and it, you know, when something important comes up, you can pull this out and write it, preferably not when you're driving. But this combination is very powerful. The pen and a paper. They did an experiment once, people with a writing pad and a pen against the people who had an electronic device. They had a quick draw to see if somebody with an iPhone or some other kind of thing, who would win in writing down a number. And they'd say the number really fast. And 9 times out of 10, the pen and paper wins. I mean, the iPhone's great for all kinds. You can run a little airline off it. But, you know, for writing things down, remembering and keeping your goals and things like that, pen and paper. So this is all part of this. Decide what you want to write it down, right? If you don't have something to write on and you don't have something to write with, then it's difficult to do that. And you might think of a goal right in the middle of your day, and you might want to write it down. And then when you come back to it later, there are things that float around in our head that we don't do for a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, or even at the time of death, we're thinking, I should have done that. But if you carry a pen and a piece of paper, then when you think of these things, you just say, I'm going to write it down. You've manifested it from a subtle level to a more gross level. That's how things manifest, from subtle to gross. They start with a desire. It's like a seed, and then it manifests outwardly. Like if you're going to build a skyscraper building, the first thing you might have is a desire, and you think, I want to have a building bigger than that building in Dubai. And you get that desire, and then next thing you write it down on paper, build building bigger than Dubai skyscraper building. That's the first step. Now, could you do it? Yeah, sure. Just, you know, you move ahead from there. Get a contractor on the phone or somebody and say, you know, I need, or get an investor, say, we're going to build a building, and you start manifesting it outwardly through mantras, and everything's built by mantra in this world. So if you decide what you want, write it down, you're way ahead of most people, because most people never decide what they want or write it down. They don't know what they want. Like, I would like you to try an experiment, and when you go to work tomorrow, wherever you are, stop a couple people in the hall or over the water cooler and just say, what's your goal in life? What's your goal in life? What do you think most people will say? If you say, what's your goal in life? What do they say?
I don't say get a life.
I don't know. They say get a life. But get a life, who knows what that means? They don't know. It'll throw people off guard. I promise you this. If you ask people, so what's your goal in life? What are your top three goals in life? What are your top five goals in life? What if you ask people that? What's your mission statement about your life? What if you ask people that? What do you think they'll say? Well, what are you talking about? I'm just working here. I'm going to go home in a while, watch TV, and go to bed. You know, leave me alone. So those who do think about these things become progressive, because in order to be progressive, you have to have a goal to look at. I saw in Vrindavan, in Prabhupada's room, in his, there's a little museum, because Prabhupada stayed in that room. There are all many of his personal effects, including, you know, the balm he used and toothbrush and all kinds of things. There's a little notebook that looks just like this. And it's open, and it has his handwriting in it. He wrote in pen to-do things and goals that he had. And one of them was about meeting with the Queen of England. You know, just he write things down. He have goals. You look at Prabhupada, how he started the ISKCON movement. You know, there are seven purposes. Are you all familiar with this? That ISKCON, Prabhupada wrote down what the seven purposes of ISKCON are. You should read this. In fact, I would like to have that document. Let's get a nice printout of it, and we'll put it on the wall here, right up here. Is that okay? We can do that next week. One of our goals from today is to print the seven purposes of ISKCON, put it in a beautiful frame, and permanently put it on the wall for everyone to read. And look it, Ramananda Sakarpa was writing it down, so I know it's going to happen. And so Shraddha Devi. So now it's manifesting. I said it, I thought of it, I said it, and now it's going to manifest because it's on the paper. So if you decide what you want and write it down, your life will become very progressive, because you start going in a certain direction. So here's another aspect of goal setting that is very important. There's an acronym for this type of goal, and it's called a SMART goal. Have you heard of SMART goals before? SMART goal? You know about this? Okay, I'll tell you what SMART goal means. And if you have something to write on, then you can write this down. So SMART stands for specific. The more specific it is, the better. For instance, someone says, what's your goal? And he says, I just want to have a good life. I have no idea what that means. For one person, you know, for a heroin addict, it means that you get lots of heroin. And for somebody else, it means to be healthy and smart. And, you know, you have to decide what you want, be very specific, and talk about it in detail. Like if you're talking about having better sadhana, you have to define what that means, specific. Better sadhana means that instead of chanting 8 rounds, I want to chant 12 rounds. Okay? And I'll sit down when I chant them, and so on. These kinds of things. Be very specific. The next letter in SMART is M, and it stands for measurable. You have to be able to measure it. How many is it? 2, 4, 8? We're talking about japa, so measurable. That's why we have japa beads, right? And if you have japa beads, you should also have counter beads. You know about counter beads, everybody? So you have japa beads. Look at, this is a goal. My goal is to bring my bead bag in from the car next time. Here. Japa beads. There's 108 beads, so you can count. He'll show you. He'll hold it up. Yeah, hold the beads up just a little bit. There. So here's japa beads, has 108, so you can count it and then show your counter beads. Hold those up. And then there's room on there so you can chant 64 rounds a day. Because you have 16 and then you usually have another 4. Do you have 16 and 4?
Yeah.
Because he has 16 on one side and 4 on the other side, so every time you chant 16, you can pull the one on the 4 side down, so you can do 16 times 4. Right? Thank you very much. Yes?
This one is for the Mataji there. That we do keep these japa malas in our gift shop in case you're interested. I saw you telling your daughter about that.
Yes. We'd like to put an advertisement for our beads. For those of you who don't have them, there's a gift shop right next door in the next building. And hopefully it'll be open today. But you can get these japa beads there. Okay? So your goal was to come see the deities, Radha Madan Mohan. It's so good to see you. Hare Krishna. Okay, so measurable. Write down what's the quantity and what time, in what time period. Attainable. It has to be something you can attain. If you say, you know, I'm chanting 2 rounds now, and, you know, by next week I'd like to be chanting 64 rounds. Not that many devotees I know have time to chant 64 rounds. It's when you live in a holy place and you can sit down and chant, you can do 64 rounds. Most devotees are chanting 16 or more than 16 rounds, but that's a minimum standard that we shoot for. It's a very advanced thing to be able to chant 16 rounds. So you can make it by increments. If you can start with 1 round, that may be attainable for you right now to chant 1 round. And then when you see that I can chant 4 rounds, then you can see that that's attainable and you can move to that level. So attainable is important. Realistic means it's something that's very much related to attainable. And timely, this is one of the most important things. You say, by such and such a date, I will achieve this goal. So SMART means specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. This is a SMART goal. So if you set a goal but you don't put a time to it, it's not SMART. It's just SMAR. It's a SMAR goal. You want SMART goals. Okay? Another tip is to write your goals in present tense and make them positive. Make them positive means it's not like you say... Don't put it in the negative that I'm not going to think of other things while I chant. The positive would be I always meditate on the holy name while I chant. I keep my mind fixed on the mantra while I chant. That's in positive. And also in the present tense, for instance, I say, I read the entire Srimad Bhagavatam in the next 5 years. I'm saying in the present tense, I chant 16 rounds a day. Starting by this date. Another key to successfully setting goals is to break large goals into smaller tasks. As an example, ask how many pages must I read per day to finish the Srimad Bhagavatam in 1 year or 2 years? So if I just say, I read the whole Srimad Bhagavatam in 2 years. That may seem like a daunting task, but if I figure out how many pages it takes to read the Srimad Bhagavatam every day, to read it in 1 year, then it seems attainable because I can do it in 1 day units. How many days, how many pages must I read every day for 2 years to read the Srimad Bhagavatam entirely? Any idea? Does anybody have the chart that be a sage page by page? Did you all get that chart? Be a sage page by page. We have a chart that tells you exactly how many pages a day you must read to finish the Srimad Bhagavatam or any one of Srila Prabhupada's books in 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. So you can look at that chart and you can tell. Then you can set a very specific goal. This is how many pages I read every day. Here's another tip. Can you remember the tips I told you already? If you wrote them down, you definitely can. What tips did we give so far?
Decide what you
want. Let's hear that mantra.
Decide what you want.
And if someone wakes you up at 1 o'clock in the morning, shakes you and says, "What was the class about tonight?" you'll say?
Decide what you want.
Okay, what else can you say about goal setting that would help? They have to be smart. And what does S stand for? M, A, R, T. Yes. Okay, so SMART goals. So remember those when you're setting goals. What else? Should be positive. We don't say, I won't eat ice cream anymore. You could say something like, I eat fruit and healthy foods, you know, for my dessert to satisfy my sweet tooth. Something like that, positive. And I say it in the present tense, right? Now, here's another technique that helps in setting goals, and that is to create accountability by sharing your goals with others that you trust. So you don't share them with people who will denigrate you and say, "Oh, you can't do that. That's not the kind of person you want to share your goal with." "Hey, I have this goal. I'm going to chant." "Why? What are you going to do that for? Chant 16 rounds? What a waste of time. Why don't you go get an MBA instead?" Some, you know, share them with somebody that you can trust that will appreciate your value. And what that does is it keeps you accountable, because when someone else that you trust knows that you're working on a particular goal, they can encourage you, and it will keep you aware that you're accountable to somebody else. And the next one is make your list of goals visible and review it often, because where attention goes, energy flows. So the mind's always wandering. Have you ever noticed that the mind wanders? When you try to focus the mind, it will go off on its own without you even knowing that it's doing it, until you become aware that you're out of focus, and then you bring it back to focus. So the way you keep fixed on your goals is to make them visible. What are some ways that you can make your goals visible? What's the first thing? Decide what you want and write it down. So if it's written, but then what if you take that written goal and you put it in your filing cabinet? Does that help? Maybe just a little bit helps, but it's much more effective. Where would you put it to make it visible if you wrote your goals? Yes.
On the fridge.
On the fridge. Give her a hand. She knows what she's talking about. There you go. So that you could say every time before you open the fridge, you have to read your goals. Or even better, you have to make your goals before you open the fridge, right? I finished my homework by 7 o'clock every night, right? Otherwise, I don't open the refrigerator. Kids, we don't eat, right? Until the homework is done by 7 o'clock. That's a fridge. The refrigerator. So what you can get at home, at Office Depot, is these little refrigerator magnets. And on the refrigerator magnet, you can write whatever you want. You can stick a piece of paper on there. That's very helpful, because you can, on most refrigerators, stick it on the fridge. If it's stainless steel, it won't stick, so you have to put it on the side. But where else could you put your goals so that they would be visible all the time?
At your workplace.
At your workplace? like where on your workplace?
So we could put them on the wall right where it's sitting facing us so that we look at it. We could also put, like, those of us who use computers, that could also become the background on the computer. Like the
Oh, you could put it right on the computer. And you could paste it on, like, on the, you could Velcro it right on,
yes,
if you're in a cubicle, something like that, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, where else?
In the car.
Where?
The bathroom mirror.
That's a great idea. So you can't miss it. You know, if you're getting ready, brushing your teeth, whatever, it's right there. You see the goals right in front of you, right? Bathroom mirror. Many people have done that before, and it reminds you every morning what your goals are, right? I want you to try this as a homework assignment. Is that okay? I'm not convinced.
Yes.
Okay, so what's the first thing that you're going to do? Decide what you want and write it down. Now, have you decided what you want? Is there a goal that you have in mind that you'd like to try to attain? Small or big doesn't matter, but it should be specific. It should be measurable, attainable, realistic, timely. Do you have a goal like that in mind right now? Let's make it toward your sadhana. Something to improve your spiritual life that you'll do to increase your spiritual practice every day. Think of it right now, what you'd like to attain. A better quality of sadhana or better quantity. Does everyone have it in mind? Or would you like to hear a few suggestions of those who do? Who has a goal in mind that's specific, that's a smart goal? Yes. Take the microphone.
While actually reading the Bhagavatam, recently it came to me that I should be learning and listening to Uddhava Gita. This one is the last teachings that were given by Lord Krishna to his closest friend, Uddhava, before he leaves his bodily form.
So what goal are you thinking of? It has to be specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. What's your specific goal when it comes to these prayers?
Specific goal is to learn and listen to Uddhava Gita by the end of this year.
The Uddhava Gita, to learn and listen to the whole thing?
Uddhava Gita.
From beginning, so to read the whole Uddhava Gita from now, from today till December 31st, that's your timely part, right?
Mm-hmm.
By December 21st, I read or listen to the entire Uddhava Gita. Okay, and are there any other aspects of these tips that would help in that?
We said we have to break it up, part of it, and review it.
Yeah. So somebody please get the Uddhava Gita. If someone knows where the Uddhava Gita is, it's in the 11th canto. Get it down and tell her how many pages approximately are within the Uddhava Gita. So we can figure out how many pages a day you need to read. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then your goal is you're breaking it up into chunks. Now, this is done by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the primary disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They use this technique. Where is that stated? By Srinivasacharya. He said, Sankhya purvakanam agana natibi kalavasani krito. Nidrahara viharakari vijito chatyanta dino chayo. He said that the Goswamis, they set goals every day for counting how many rounds of japa they would chant, how many shlokas they would learn, how many times they would bow down. These things they did in scheduled measurement. They set a goal for it every day. And the specific numbers too. Thousands of times bowing down and other kinds of things like this. So we can apply these principles in our own life for a sadhana. And when we do, then we'll contact Krishna on a regular basis. Just as a person who's an entrepreneur and they're desirous of building an empire, how do they start off? They write it down and then they do it a little bit at a time, right? They set a goal and they say, I'm going to I'm going to develop a, you know, the biggest corporation in the world. So we are spiritual entrepreneurs. Each one of you is an entrepreneur spiritually. You have your own volition to develop spiritually as much as you like. And this is one of the techniques used by the great acharyas. They set goals. Srila Prabhupada set a goal to start a worldwide movement that would spread Krishna consciousness to every part of the world. And how did he do it? He started by setting goals. You can read in his letters, even as far back as India, when he started the League of Devotees back in Jhansi. And that program didn't go. But he's transferred those goals over to the United States, and he has the seven goals for ISKCON. He had a very detailed account of exactly how he would organize his society to train people to become brahminical so that they would go out and teach others and take up the work also. Very detailed, exactly what to do. Sri Govindadatta, do we have the pages? We'll have them soon. So now you're hot on the trail of having a smart goal in Krishna consciousness. Her goal is from today till December 31st, she will read or listen to the entire Uddhava Gita, and Sri Govindadatta is about to reveal to us how many pages that is.
1,060.
What is it? 1,060 pages. Now someone figure out how many days are left between now and the end of the year. Come on, engineers, let's go. How many days starting today all the way till December 31st?
About
150 days left. And she has 1,600 pages to read?
60.
Oh, that's easy. 1,060 pages in 150 days. Tell us how many pages she has to read every day.
7.
7 pages a day is all you have to do in order to reach your goal. Does that seem attainable now? Okay. You're going to start today?
She's the sharing
God. And then she's going to read it to you, right?
She's the accountable person.
Oh, she's sharing with her. She'll be accountable. And I think she will keep you accountable, right? You'll do that?
She has to represent the magnet.
Very good. Already, you know, just by hearing her set this goal, I'm feeling inspired. Now I want to read the Uddhava Gita. And this is how it spreads. You see, this kind of enthusiasm, it's built through this having a purposeful spiritual life. Become a spiritual entrepreneur. Write these things down. Decide what you want. Just don't leave it to fate and say, you know, 5 years and 10 years, then I'll become serious about spiritual life. Become serious now. And what it means is set an attainable goal for you. You can't chant like Haridas Thakur chanted, or you can't chant like somebody else, but chant like you can do. Do what you can do now and set a goal and you'll improve. And remember the story of the tortoise and the hare. Do you all know the story of the tortoise and the hare? Should I tell it again? The hare thought that I'm the fastest animal around, and when he was racing around, he'd just take it easy because he thought the tortoise, he'll never make it. You know, I can beat him any day of the week. But the tortoise just kept on going a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. And the hare went to sleep on the side of the road. And the tortoise methodically kept moving his legs and arms. And he finally passed the hare and went right across the finish line. And let's hear it for the tortoise. Come on. A little more. Tortoise. So you remember the tortoise and the hare. And be methodical. Set some spiritual goals for yourself. Who else has a goal they want to set? Anything in mind that you'd like to do? Because I'm so enlivened by this Uddhava Gita, seven pages. Now today, if somebody asked you what the class is about, you could say, I can't believe it's incredible, it's exciting, this is the most unbelievable thing I ever heard. Decide what you want and write it down. And one of the devotees decided that she's going to read or listen to the whole Uddhava Gita between now and the end of the year, and all it takes is 7 pages a day. What else you got? You can do anything you want by setting goals and just breaking it into small pieces. Anything you want. What do you have on your plate? If you don't have a dream, how are you going to have a dream come true? Come on, work with me, people. Here.
Chair,
had a question about the goals. Like, I would like to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yes.
And is it okay to kind of like work backwards on the time by looking at how many pages there are and how many are doable to read that way and kind of adjust the goal?
Sure, whatever works for you. You know, whatever gets it into a package so that you can see it, you can believe it, and then you can perform something reasonable, realistic for you every day.
And I also had one question that when we set goals like this, where we have a certain piece of, you know, like certain set of pages to read every day, then how do we handle the guilt? Like if you sometimes miss, like some days are really, really out of hands.
Then you make up for it on another day, because there'll be other times when you're driving in a car and you have 2 hours and then you just say, okay, I'll just do 21 pages. You need to make up for it. And the other thing is, guilt is pretty much a useless emotion. Don't succumb to it. Just get busy and fix it. You don't have to be guilty. It weighs you down too much. If it motivates you, it's not useless. What else? Anybody have a goal? So you're going to read the Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Yes.
Between now or starting when?
It'll take me 3 years, I think.
Okay, so you have a goal. This is a smart goal, and that is to read the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Yes, probably.
And starting when?
Starting tomorrow.
Starting tomorrow. And then do you know how many pages you have to read every day for 3 years?
No.
So how do you know it's 3 years then?
I was just drawing some parallels. Like it took me 3 years to... I'm now in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Okay.
So I'm kind of just thinking that I might be able to do it some ballpark.
All right.
From experience, yeah.
But when you take a closer look at it, you can make more specific goals, because you can look at page by page, BSH, and then you can find out for yourself what's manageable, what you can actually do. And then you write it down, share it with somebody that you're doing this, and begin your process. And that becomes a new impetus in your life. You have 24 hours in a day, just like everyone else. But if you're smart about it and you set goals that keep you in contact with Krishna on a regular daily basis, you'll make rapid advancement in spiritual life. This is part of the sadhana bhakti process, is to set these spiritual goals for yourself. Anybody else have a goal? I want to hear them, because now I'm going to read the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita, and I want to figure out how many pages a day you're going to read. What else do you have? I just for my own edification. A goal, a spiritual goal that you have. It can be simple. It doesn't have to be... Yes?
Select some of the lectures for every...
What did you say?
Like, select some lectures. Like,
okay, I thought you said try.
No.
Oh. You can't use the word try when you're setting goals. In fact, I recommend take that out of your vocabulary. That you do or do not, but there is no try. Okay, go ahead.
I select some lectures that I want to hear throughout the week, and then basically repeatedly hear them and make the notes. And
some lectures, that's not specific.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember the lecture names, that's why, but we keep them in the laptop, and so we go through them.
Some means how many lectures, do you think?
Like 7 lectures.
So I select 7 lectures. For each week, and I hear one a day.
Or, like, I want to finish in the week, need to finish all of them. So maybe, like, 2 in one day.
Okay, so I select 7 lectures at the beginning of each week, and I complete listening to them before the end of the week. And when are you going to start that?
Ongoing process.
It's an ongoing process. But is it already going on?
Yes.
Oh, you're already doing it. Now I want to select 7 lectures and listen to them every week. Can we hear one more? Anybody have a goal? Simple, complicated, whatever it is.
I have a goal that I at least hear a lecture for about 45 minutes every day. So it's very achievable. I mean, almost I'm able to achieve it every day, 45 minutes hearing.
So, nice. That's something you're already doing, though.
Yeah.
Do you have a new goal? Anything else you want to add? Or is your sadhana going just about perfect now?
No, it's not perfect, but new goal would be to read at least 2 to 3 pages of Prabhupada books. Yeah, because reading is very poor.
Two or three. Remember, it's smart goals got to be specific.
Okay. So two pages at least.
Okay, good. So I read...
I read 2 pages of Prabhupada books.
Every week?
Every day.
Every day?
Hmm.
Starting?
Starting today.
Okay. And did you write it down? That it's not a goal yet. Because the mantra is... Decide what you want and write it down. These are practical things. So I also recommend you get your own little notebook somewhere. Get your own spiritual notebook and write your goals down in it and keep a tab of what your goals are. And also, if you have to, you can adjust them. If you pick a goal that's way too aggressive and you figure that you're feeling guilty because you can't make it or something like that, then readjust it. The main thing is to keep the momentum going. Keep the sound vibration going. So we've heard several goals now. Yes.
One thing I liked was I read somewhere that if we make a goal and we're not able to meet it, sometimes we make a like the vows. When we take a vow to do something and we don't take a vow, we can take a vow that is more harder to. If I miss this, I will do something more to accomplish it. So the mind has a fear. If I don't do it, I have to do more. So let's at least do this.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, you're saying that you make a vow that if I don't do it, then I'll have to do more. And that it motivates you. It could motivate some people, could demotivate it. You have to find what motivates you particularly. Some people I find if you set the goal lower, it's more motivating. You know, like... Virgendra, you know, he was talking about 2 or 3 pages and then he picked the 2 because then you can smash the goal if you want. You know, if you have a goal that seems easy to you, then you say, oh, that's easy. I can do that every day. And then you become motivated. If it seems a little too hard, then the mind can drag on you and say, you know, that's too difficult and it could pull you back. So attainable and realistic, those are important parts of a smart goal so that it seems reasonable to you that you could actually do it. So today Sunny.
Prabhuji, these days I don't keep the goals. But I used to do that about 6-7 years ago for business purpose.
Yeah.
But when you are writing down all these goals, to do something with it means today when you write something, to practically do something, for example, maybe it is a phone call or just go to the internet and find more detail about that. Or to do something is the real inspiration. So that is practical improvement. So at least 2 things to do that. For example, we decide to read something. And we want to read that 2 pages. So do that today when you are decided to do that. That will inspire it for the tomorrow's moment. That momentum keep going.
Okay, Regenera. Very good. Do your 2 pages.
Before prasadam.
Before I take prasadam every day. Whatever. Yeah, that's a good point. Get momentum. When you decide what it is, start right away. Because oftentimes you'll see how easy it is to do and you'll feel inspired by it. And a job begun is half done. Yes.
I read that Prabhupada said that how he used to chant his rounds. So he said that I chanted my rounds before taking prasadam. So so that way is, you know, one will keep it like Sri Gondath Prabhu was telling that, you know, after this thing that if you don't do it before that, then you won't take or you may have to do something more than that. So generally, sometimes Prabhupada was explaining that, you know, if you chant, if you neglect it, because prasadam nobody neglects, lunch nobody neglects. But if you do it before that, then you do it in a proper mood, and you know, you do it compulsorily, something like that.
Okay, you know, Prabhupada also wrote a letter. He told one householder devotee who was having a hard time finishing his rounds and working at the same time. Prabhupada said that he used to, when he was working, chant 4 rounds in the morning, 4 a little bit later in the morning, after prasadam, 4 like around work time and 4 in the evening. to make sure that he completed his 16 rounds. So there may be different kinds of accommodations at different times of your life. So be realistic about when you're doing that. Thank you very much. So we're going to have Artik, and we can put away all the books and the asans, and we'll stand up before Radha and Krishna, and we'll sing. And then just after that, we have a couple of announcements, and then we'll have prasadam. Thank you very much. Gaur Premanande Haribol.